Chapter 54. Ben-Gurion International Airport, Tel Aviv, Israel. Rudy Gunn stood on the curb outside the main terminal at Ben-Gurion International. Despite a lightweight linen jacket and a hat to keep the sun off his head, he was sweating in the August heat the moment he stepped out of the air-conditioned building. Fortunately, a white Lincoln was already pulling up in front of him. "Mr. Gunn," the driver asked. Rudy nodded and took off his jacket and climbed into the car. "How quickly can you get me downtown?" "There should be no delays whatsoever," the driver insisted. "Traffic has been getting lighter every day." "Where are you going?" The message didn't say. "The general staff building at the Kiria," Rudy replied. The Kiria was an area in Tel Aviv where the Israeli Defense Force headquarters were located. In essence, it was the Israeli version of the Pentagon. Rudy had been there several times. The trip from the airport usually started out smoothly and then got bogged down in traffic. But on this run, the only traffic Rudy saw was a long collection of cars and trucks waiting to fuel up at a single gas station. "Have they started rationing gasoline?" "Not officially," the driver said, "but many of the stations are closed. A large new tax has been imposed on any vehicle that isn't a hybrid or electric. It's calculated based on mileage, so no one drives if they don't have to. It's my living, so I don't have a choice." Rudy sat back. He'd seen lines at the gas stations in Washington before he left. The price of oil was going through the roof, just as the president said it would. Traders were riding the wave with glee, while regular people were acting the way they often did before a hurricane rolled through, filling up everything in sight in case there was no gas available next week. Rumors of gas stations closing and oil companies withholding deliveries made it all worse. Then, in an attempt to calm the public, the president had gone on television to assure everyone that there was enough oil in the strategic reserve and coming in from unaffected sources for the nation to function normally without grinding to a halt. The effect of that speech was panic. Unfortunately, Rudy thought, a presidential denial of a problem served only to confirm in the minds of many that the problem was real. Silently, he wondered how far America was from mileage taxes, forced carpooling, or people checking their license plates to see if they ended in odd or even numbers, as they'd done during rationing in the 70s. "Front gate of the Kiria coming up," the driver said. He was soon passing through the outer gate. From there, he quickly reached central reception, where Rudy's NUMA ID was enough to get him in front of a receptionist from the Office of Naval Records. "I'm here to see Admiral Natal," he said, holding out his credentials yet again. The uniformed aide checked his computer screen. "There's nothing on the Admiral's calendar about a visitor from NUMA." "I'm an old friend," Rudy said. "Please, just give the Admiral my name." "He's very busy." "As he should be," Rudy said, "but tell him I'll wait. All day, if I have to." Rudy's patience was not required. He would cool his heels for no more than 5 minutes before the aide returned and escorted him to Admiral Natal's office. There, the two men shook hands warmly and sized each other up after several years without face-to-face contact. "Wait all day, would you?" the admiral said. "You've used that trick on me before." Admiral Natal was 30 years Rudy's senior, nearly the same height and pure gray on top. He'd spent 2 years as a visiting professor at Annapolis, back when Rudy was a student at the Naval Academy. They'd seen each other occasionally at functions since then, and had even worked together on a project several years back. "You'd misgraded my test," Rudy reminded him. "I misgraded everyone's exam," the admiral said. "The true test was seeing who would come in and argue their score." "You were the only one who waited for me to return. And all for a few meaningless extra points that wouldn't affect your A+. "I like getting things right," Rudy said, "which is why I'm here, to make something right and to ask you several questions. Somehow I didn't think it would be a personal visit. What's on your mind?" "NUMA has a crew diving on the Dakar," Rudy said. The admiral's face tensed. "That boat is a tomb, Rudy. Of all people, I would expect you to understand that. What possible reason could you have for disturbing it?" Rudy didn't offer any reasons just yet. We've recovered personal artifacts that we'd like to return to the families of the men who were lost. I assume I can have them delivered here, to you? Of course, Natal said, leaning back in his chair and staring at Rudy as if trying to gauge him. But I'm sure you haven't come all this way just to ask me that. No, I didn't, Rudy said. I came to ask you about the Dakar's cargo. I need to know what she was carrying when she went down. Carrying? I have good reason to believe there was a biological weapon on board, Rudy said. A strain of bacteria that feasts on hydrocarbons, destroying the productive capacity of oil fields and creating dangerous toxic gases that cannot be safely handled. The Admiral seemed unmoved. Rudy, this sounds like fantasy. Rudy had expected some pushback. It cannot have escaped you what's going on around the world right now. It started right after someone else dived on the Dakar and cut that ship apart. For the first time, Natal appeared unnerved. Cut it apart. It's sitting on the bottom in three sections, Rudy said. It's been ransacked and cleaned out. We've found equipment and personal effects strewn all over the seafloor. We also found this. Rudy reached into his pocket and pulled out the French naval pin that Kurt had recovered. He placed it on the Admiral's desk, pausing and then sliding it over to him. The Admiral picked it up and looked it over, front and back. Rudy gave him time to process what he was holding. We've found the remnants of three separate uniforms belonging not to the INS sailors, but to crewmen from La Royale. La Royale was the nickname of the French Navy. He looked at the pin once more, shook his head softly, and sighed. We know there was a weapon, Rudy said. We know it was developed in conjunction with the French. We assume this pin came from a sailor working with your people before the weapon was stolen. It was stolen, Natal insisted, but by the French, not by us. Then what was it doing on board the Dakar? Rudy asked. And why would the French Air Force sink a vessel partially crewed by their own personnel? The Admiral turned the pin over in his hand several more times. I had a feeling someone would come to ask that question one day. I suppose I should be thankful it's you. He slid the pin back to Rudy. This is not something my country can admit to. We have enough enemies in this world already, and in all honesty, we assumed the weapon had been destroyed by the effects of time. I understand Israel's position in the world, Rudy said. That's why I'm here in person. Nothing needs to be disclosed, but we need the antidote, the counteragent, or at least the scientific data showing us how it was created. Don't you think we'd have already given it to you if we had it? I would hope so. Of course we would have, the Admiral said. Do you think we want our enemies earning $300 a barrel for their oil while our allies and our own economy suffer? Then why can't you help? The Admiral stared off into the distance, contemplating a decision, then rose from his seat. Come with me, he said. I'll show you why.